Well, I think the number of people on the highway who are a threat and are impaired enough to risk lives on the highway is very small. And when we're passing laws that apply to the entire adult population, that makes me very uncomfortable, especially since year after year, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, I think it is, puts out a year-end report on traffic safety, and for years in a row, they announce that the highway death toll has been the lowest it's been since World War II. So I don't accept the blood on the highway story. There are lots of terrible tales about this and personal stories, but overall, I think Wisconsin's highways are safer than they have been before. I think we're having less drunk driving than we had before, and so I think the sensational headlines are deceiving.
Thank you. Anyone else like to comment?
I would just say that I agree with Jim in part that our highways have become safer somewhat, but every year there are more motorists on the highway. Also, there has been an impact on drunk driving, definitely. Statistics will show that also. However, if it is your family or a member of your family that is the victim of a drunk driver, I think you may have a different view on just that one person or very few people being out there driving drunk. That one person can devastate an entire family.
Okay, thank you. Why don't we go ahead and move forward then? And I'd like to ask Brad, if he would, to ask his third question. And because we're running short on time, I'd like to call this a bit of a speed round. And so if you could try to answer this question, because it is sort of a yes or no question, but in 10 words or less, and then we can keep on track, okay? That's right. You do have to buzz in, right? Yeah. Thank you, Brad.
And unfortunately, the question itself is about 100 words long. So, right. So bear with me, please. Wisconsin has the highest rates of both drunk driving and binge drinking in the country. Alcohol abuse places significant costs on all taxpayers by burdening limited resources for local law enforcement. Would you consider supporting law enforcement and alcohol abuse prevention by raising the price of alcohol?
Okay, let's start with Jim, and then we'll come my way, and then we'll go back the other way.
Raising taxes, is that your question?
Specifically, raising the price of alcohol.
Okay. Well, first of all, on the binge drinking thing, I think that this is a government definition of binge drinking. I think is 5 drinks in 3 hours or something like that. So if you sit down at the Packer game and have a beer each quarter, according to the government, you're on a binge, whereas the medical definition would be you're totally irresponsible, self-destructive, staggering around, can't work, can't socialize effectively for at least a day or two at a time. That's a binge. So I don't accept that definition of a binge, and I don't want to raise the taxes on Wisconsinites.
Thank you. Don't forget it's a speed round. Dennis?
I'm not going to make a definitive yes or no answer here. What I'm going to say is that it's something that needs to be examined. I have seen families devastated economically by alcohol, either alcoholism itself or a drunk driving accident or what have you. I believe that education and enforcement are important in the process also. And again, we need to examine all the facts and make informed decisions.
Thank you. Elizabeth?
What he said. actually, no, I honestly thought that he summed up my feelings very well. I can't commit one way or to the other on whether I think raising the price of alcohol is going to make a dent in it. I don't know what studies say. I don't know what people think. I certainly think we have to focus on prevention. I don't know if raising the price of alcohol will do that.
Thank you. Paul?
Well, I will just cut to the chase. Nobody is going to commit to raising taxes, because if we do, our opponent is going to take that little snippet and put it on a mailer that you're going to get 1,000 times before November 6th. That's the world we live in. So when you hear us being elusive, just know that that is what is happening here, okay? So I'm going to say I need more information. I need to do more research, and that's what everybody is going to say. The fact that is, I did some stories on this very topic. Therese Brousseau introduced a bill that would have raised the tax on alcohol. And, of course, she was criticized, and Republicans put out press releases calling her un-American or certainly un-Wisconsinite for implying such a thing. But, of course, the tax on alcohol is so minuscule, and it's never been indexed, I don't think, for an inflation. I don't think it's been increased in years and years and years and years. But having said that, I'm not going to take a stand one way or the other and have that stand then put out in a bunch of robocalls and on TV stations and on WSAU and everything else. But I will say this. I'm very fortunate. My parents didn't drink when I was a kid, and I grew up in a culture where there was no drinking. And my friends didn't drink, and we stuck together. And we made sure, because we had seen our other friends go down some really bad paths already in high school. And I think what you need is more people that are going to lead by example. And that's definitely something that I think is very effective. And that's a message that, I'm sorry, this is a speed round, I forgot. It's a message I'll take to students and kids.
Thank you. Yep. Pat?
I would definitely talk with my fellow legislators and consider this. And if something like this did occur, I would want to make sure that the tax that would be added to it would go to the prevention and not to the general fund. So it would serve the purpose it was supposed to serve.
Thank you, Pat. Mandy, last word.
I do think this is something important to consider. Wisconsin's beer tax has not changed since 1969, as well as we rank 48th in taxes of the 50 states. So we're one of the lowest in taxes. I think those are very important things to consider, and I do think we need to support law enforcement and we need to support alcohol abuse prevention. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, let's move quickly to tobacco.
But before that, by the way, you pay $7.50 a beer at the Packer games. So, and there are people that are buying three or four of these. I don't know.
Packer stacks, right. Okay, again, we'll start this round by reading a brief statement, and then we'll turn to our questioner. Tobacco use is the leading preventable cause of death, disease, and disability across the United States and in our area. Smoke-free work policies and increased taxes are two of the proven strategies that have lowered the rate of smoking from 1 in 3 adults a decade ago to 1 in 5 adults today. However, health care costs associated with tobacco use remain high at approximately $64 million a year in Marathon County alone. As a result of lost revenue, tobacco companies are developing new products, including fruit flavoring and smokeless products, to attract the attention of a new generation of potential users. And 1 in 2 children, as well as vulnerable populations, still suffer from the effects of secondhand smoke. There remains a role for all of us to play in further reducing the toll tobacco takes on families, businesses, and communities in central Wisconsin. Our questioner will be Shelley Parcells.
Currently, the state spends approximately $1.6 billion in health care costs related to tobacco use every year. The state also collects close to $800 million in tax revenue related to tobacco sales. My first question is, do you think it is reasonable that at least 5% of that revenue should be used to prevent kids from starting to smoke and to support smoking cessation programs for adults? Second part of the question is, do you have any other ideas on how we could support prevention of smoking?
Okay, we'll start this round with Paul Knopf, and we'll move forward down the line.
Actually, I pronounce it Knopf, so just remember, if you've had enough, vote for Knopf. That's what I'm talking about. Where my parents weren't drinkers, they were smokers and are still smokers, and that has been a huge deterrent for me, and I have not started smoking, in large part because of living in that atmosphere. Off the top of my head and looking at this proposal, 5% seems very reasonable to me. I think any amount of money that we spend preventing kids from smoking is going to save us money down the road, because we all know that whether we admit it or not, we have somewhat of a socialized form of medicine, and that all the cost is spread around once we go into the hospital facility. So we need to make sure that we're preventing folks from starting from an early age. That's when habits are developed, and I think 5% sounds like a very reasonable amount. As far as other ideas for prevention, being on the Clark County Prevention Partnership, we're constantly brainstorming ways of going out to schools and talking to people about smoking, drug use, alcohol abuse, and that sort of thing. And I think that I'm new to the Marathon County. Is it Healthy Marathon County? Is that what the group is called? But it sounds like it's a great, great organization. And I'm not sure if you have any dissemination grant money, but I'm sure other counties around the state would love to hear how well you guys are doing, and we can work at it from there.
Thank you. Pat.
Yes, I would support part of the 5% of the revenues that's collected from the tobacco tax to go to prevention. Seems rather minuscule right now. This is kind of one of those double-edged swords. The more you educate, the more you cut down on smoking, the less the tobacco tax will get less funds, so we're going to have to figure out ways of funding the state without that. But when you consider the health benefits of people not smoking, that does seem to weigh in very well. I just, in this day and age, as much as we hear about how bad smoking is and what it can do, that there are still kids that want to smoke. I imagine my parents also smoked. My dad gave it up about 10 years ago, finally. And feels great. But not being a smoker, I don't know what it's like to be addicted to nicotine and to try to give that up, and how tough that might be. So to be able to educate, especially at that young age, like the DARE programs do with drugs and alcohol, I think definitely is something to explore. And I would say yes, that part of that tobacco tax fund should go to that 5%.
Thank you, Mandy.
I certainly think that 5% is a reasonable amount to spend on educating and keeping our kids healthy. I think we can support the DARE program and look into other programs that have been proven successful. As far as other options, I learned that tobacco spends $274 million on marketing each year and only $5 million on education. So maybe we could ask the tobacco companies themselves if they could help us fund some prevention programs. Possibly we need a tax targeted particularly on the corporation themselves. In addition, I just met this past weekend again with the 18 Clan Council, which is leadership of the Hmong community from around the state. And I asked them, are there any particular issues you would like me to represent you on? And this is exactly what came up. Heart disease is a leading killer in the Hmong community. Many of the veterans picked up smoking while they were in Southeast Asia, and it continues to plague the community here in Wisconsin. So I think there are many, many ways that we can work to prevent tobacco use, and I think it's not just about educating our children, but it's also about providing services and opportunities to adults in the community to choose healthier lifestyles for themselves and for their families.
Thank you. Jim?
I have no objection to the 5% going to prevention efforts, but I'd like to see what those efforts specifically would be before I'd give total approval. I think we need a little more research on that. And then as far as ideas for prevention, what worked for me, when my dad quit cold turkey, he had an open pack of unfiltered Camels that he put in the door. So when I got older, 15 years later, I pulled that out. I thought I'd try an unfiltered, dried-out Camel cigarette, and that deterred me. So I think we should go around to the schools and give kids unfiltered Camel cigarettes, and the problem would be solved.
Okay. Dennis?
And Paul, just so you know, I'm not hedging my bet on this one. Okay. I've done a little research on this, actually, and did some checking, and I did a comparative study with Wisconsin and Minnesota, similar-sized populations. The tax on a pack of cigarettes in Wisconsin is $2.52. In Minnesota, it's $1.58, and yet Minnesota spends a total of $21,134,000 per year on funding for tobacco control programs. The state of Wisconsin spends a grand total of $7,555,000. Minnesota, their tax is a dollar less pack of cigarettes, and yet they spend three times as much on tobacco control programs. I think that says something about our system the way it's being run now. Do I agree that it should be raised? Again, I'd like to do a little more research, but just this little bit that I've done here. I've also taken a look at people that have quit recently and why they quit. The reason is because the taxes have gone up on cigarettes. The price has gone astronomically high for some of them, and they can't afford it, so they quit smoking. The hardcore smokers, just like the hardcore binge drinkers, are not going to be deterred by the amount of taxes you put on something. But I will say that I think we should definitely look at funding more for our control programs, for smoking control programs in this state.
Thank you. Elizabeth?
To me, 5% does not sound unreasonable at all. I think it should be more than that, put toward programs for prevention for young people and cessation for adults. One of the things that I always think is that tobacco companies are a little bit like computer hackers or terrorists. Every time you think you've got them stopped, they find a new way to get around the technology. And some of the products that they're marketing now to little kids are scary. They look just like candy. I had a conversation with somebody earlier today, and there was a little stand out there that had some of these products on them. They look just like candy, and they're marketed to little kids. And as long as they're going to do that, people will become addicted. And kids and teenagers especially, who are more likely, again, brain developmentally wise, to become addicted, are some of the most vulnerable victims of that kind of marketing. So I would certainly support 5% of that going to prevention. I also like the idea of a tax on corporations that manufacture these products, because these are products that they're the only products I know of, really, where if you use them the way they want you to use them, you will die. To me, it just sort of makes sense that corporations that are in the business of killing people should actually have to pay for that.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll go to question two.
My second question is related to taxes again. The current tax on the candy-flavored cigarettes and cigars that are on display out there, and for anybody who hasn't seen it, I recommend you go look at it, because it's very difficult to tell a cigar from a pack of gum or chewing tobacco or anything like that. So check that out before you leave. But the current tax on the candied flavored cigars is 71% of the wholesale price of the product. In many cases, this represents pennies in tax dollars. The state cigarette tax, as was spoken before, was $2.52 per pack. Since the harm to the user is substantially the same and it also costs the state millions of dollars, would you support a proposal to make all tobacco products taxed at the same rate as cigarettes?
Okay, for this round, we'll start with Mandy, and we'll go to the right.
Thank you. Clearly, this is unbalanced, and we need to create balance taxing tobacco products at a similar rate, at least. I also agree with Elizabeth's comments that tobacco companies are dangerous, and when we are creating products that entice children in particular, obviously they are trying to create lifelong users of their products, and so we need to be especially careful how we treat these products that are clearly marketed towards children. As a mother of three daughters, as a teacher of sixth graders, I think of all the time and energy we put into growing healthy, safe, responsible kids, and how much this kind of addiction can hurt a person in their growth and in their future. I think it's really important that we do everything we can to deter kids from becoming addicted to tobacco.
Thank you. Pat?
Yeah, I think that the tax should be on a level playing field with all the tobacco, and so I would consider that with my fellow legislators to look into that. And you still have to be 18 to be able to purchase this tobacco, and otherwise they're getting help by someone older. So there's more, I guess, to look at than just the youngster. We have to look at who's supplying someone who's not 18, because I know I've been to Quick Trip and they always ask for an ID if someone is purchasing tobacco. So make sure that those establishments continue that, but then also do we go further and go after an adult who's older than 18 buying something for someone younger? Things always to consider and to look at it at that. And but as far as a level playing field, tobacco tax should be equal for all.
Thank you. Paul?
Well, if Pat Snyder's all in on increasing taxes, I guess I can be too. So I think leveling off the playing field is probably a good idea. And I do want to bring up one story. As Elizabeth was talking, I think we've all probably knocked on thousands of doors already this year. And one door that I came to was a gentleman in Marshfield, a guy that I actually went to school with but hadn't seen for a long time. And he was outside of his house, and he started to smoke a cigarette. And he asked me, Paul, how do you feel about these things? And I thought, oh, here we go. You know, what do you think of the tax on cigarettes? And I was trying to hedge a little bit, Dennis, and I said, well, how do you feel about cigarettes? And he said, I want you to outlaw them because they're killing me and I can't stop. And he said exactly what Elizabeth said. What other product can you buy on the market? He used that exact line, and it struck me that you can use and die from using it. Having said that, that little voice in the back of my head says, my parents are a great example where they have tried to quit smoking, and they can't do it. They're hooked. They've gone through all the treatments, and the tax has been very penal to them. We've stopped as a family, and maybe we shouldn't have, but we've stopped trying to get them to stop because it's difficult as a family to talk about that sort of thing when you know that they're emotionally troubled by the fact that they can't quit too. So, again, answering the question, I think, yeah, leveling the playing field and making sure those products that are specifically targeted to kids, that's very low, as we say in the business. So I would agree with Pat Snyder.
Thank you. Elizabeth.
I would support leveling that to make it the same tax, too, to bring the candy-flavored products up to the same tax as other products have. I look at the health benefits or the health problems that result of smoking, COPD. Many people automatically think of lung cancer when they think of smoking, but the cardiovascular disease is absolutely astounding in how bad it is and how long people suffer with it, and that can lead to things like congestive heart failure and all kinds of other chronic conditions that are really horrible. So anything we can do, I think, to deter people from buying these products, and if that means raising the prices on them, they should be.
Thank you. Dennis?
I agree with a number of things that have been said here. Obviously, these types of products are targeted to our young people. And even if they're not able to buy them, if at 18 years old they can buy this, it may be something that they could stomach. something that if they want to try a cigarette, it's not so bad. It has a little flavoring to it. I think I can handle this. So I believe that the playing field, like everyone else here, should be leveled. The tobacco products should be taxed the same rate, no matter what they are.
Thank you. And Jim, the last word on this topic?
Well, I think taxing similar products at the same rate seems fair to me. I'll just point out, though, that taxing them the same, you have to be careful of what you ask for, because you might get it, and it might not be taxed at the highest rate. It might be taxed at a much lower rate or a medium rate. So who knows what's going to happen after such a proposal gets through the legislature.
Thank you. We just have a couple minutes here for some free flow discussion. Is there anything that's been said that you'd like to comment on, or any additional thoughts that you've had since we've been discussing tobacco? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead to question three.
Wisconsin residents have shown a significant support, 75% in the recent polls, for smoke-free air in the 2 years since all workers and patrons were protected from secondhand smoke. Additionally, research has shown that workers most exposed to secondhand smoke in the past are already benefiting from improved health outcomes. How would you help to ensure that this popular and successful approach is continued?
And if we could, just to keep on track, if we keep our responses to 1 minute, please. Elizabeth.
I really don't know how to answer that question. I don't know what I personally would do to make sure that we continue to have this law that says you can't smoke in public places. Certainly, as a healthcare professional, as a citizen, and as someone who does not want to breathe somebody else's smoky air, I was very happy when we finally got the ability to outlaw cigarettes in public places. You could go to a restaurant and have a meal, and the smoking section smoke didn't come back to you or whatever. So I don't know that we're in any danger of having that law changed. If I ever heard noises that people wanted to change it, I would be on my hind legs to keep it in. So that's what I'll say.
Thank you. Dennis?
And I have to concur with Elizabeth. I don't see any efforts being made to reverse this. And I just wanted to bring attention to something called the Life Report. It stands for Local Indicators for Excellence. And it's put out, it's a survey done in Marathon County every 2 years. The statewide, it's popular by 75% of the people. Here in Marathon County, it's 86% of the people agree with smoke-free environments. So the local reaction here is important to me. These are the people I'll be representing, and no way are we going back to what we had before.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, I'm not aware of any effort to eliminate that law, but frankly, for a libertarian, the law, I think, went too far in a number of ways. It violates the private property rights of the owners of businesses, which you call public, but they're privately owned, and so that's a problem for libertarians. The local control was eliminated. We had some communities that decided to ban smoking. Some didn't, and so people had choices. And libertarians would say that people should have a choice and accept the consequences and accept responsibility for what happens. And the thing that really bothers me is they applied this no smoking law to the smoking lounge in the Wisconsin Veterans Home, which was completely ventilated. And these old guys that are spending the last years of their life, hopefully in comfort, are required now to either quit or go outside in the winter or in the summer. So I think that bothers me.
Thank you. Mandy?
I can tell you that I have had personal experience. I've been pregnant with three children in this community, and when I wanted to go out for a Friday night fish fry, it was often awkward because the restaurant that we would choose would be connected to a bar, and there would be smoking there, and I always felt uncomfortable. I am really glad, not just for myself, but for all community members, especially the people working in those conditions, that we have passed this law, that it's very strong, that there's a lot of community support, and if necessary, I would find strong advocates, resources like we have at this table, to make sure that we continue this law.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree that the bar owners and restaurant owners know that this is very popular, and I have not heard any of them wanting to go back. They have made the arrangements, building on the separate buildings for the smokers or just letting them go outside. But they said that they don't expect this to go back. And a lot of people do like to be able to go out and come home smoke-free from their clothes. So I don't anticipate, and I would not support any legislation to repeal this.
Thank you.
Yeah, this law is not going anywhere. I'm going to say that I like to be contrarian sometimes, and I know what Jim is saying, that this is not a ban on smoking in public places. It's a smoking ban in private places. And I struggled with that a little bit because I do know Jim's concerns, and I actually share those concerns that you don't want the government to get too overbearing on private property. But here's the difference. It's a ban on smoking in workplaces. And that's how I've come to understand this law, and it makes good sense. If somebody was working in a plastics factory, we would be ashamed if we forced those people to breathe in the fumes from the plastic, and there would be heck to pay. This law is not going anywhere. Very popular. Bar owners like it, and I'll counter Jim just a little bit here. Bar owners didn't like the local patchwork that they had, because you had a bar owner on the fringe of Marshfield that was inside a smoking ban area, and just down the road they were in the town of McMillan and they could allow smoking. So they like the level playing field.
Well, thank you, and I'd also like to thank all the candidates for keeping within your time limits. It's much appreciated, and we're right on schedule. So we'll now turn to the topic of obesity, and I'll read a short statement here for the questions. Currently, 63% of Marathon County residents are either obese or overweight. Obesity puts people at higher risk for other chronic diseases such as diabetes and heart disease, and places a financial burden on us via medical expenses. Creating environments where we live, work, and play that encourage exercise, provide access to good nutrition, and support healthy behaviors are all ways to help fight this epidemic. So we'll now turn to Sue Gantner with our questions.
If trends continue, close to half of Wisconsinites will be obese in our lifetimes. So the first question is, do you believe that obesity prevention is a problem for individuals to deal with, or that government should play a role in prevention by creating healthier environments?
Let's go ahead and start with Jim Moss this time.